Going live, I am live with all new stuff. Wow. So I have actually written up all the stuff. I've got a, well, when I say written up, I've got a draft blog post with like lots of stuff sitting in there without any real content yet. It's just like headings and notes and things like that. So I do hope to actually write all that up when I get time. I've got a bunch of blogging I want to do. So I got that. I got all the IoT stuff I want to do, a bunch of other blog posts in progress. And I just need time to sit and focus and do this. So, and hey, look, if you're joining in, like I can see the comments over there, just let me know, does this sound and look all right? I did just do a test run because it is new devices and new inputs and things like that. And I have been known to screw this up in the past as well. So let me know, does it sound okay? Does it look okay? And then I'll comment on some of the things with that. Sounds great. Thanks, Josh. That's awesome, mate. That makes life a lot easier. So let me talk about what's here for a little bit, and then we'll jump into the other stuff because I'm conscious I sort of tweet this and it takes a little while for people to start joining in. So I am talking on the Sony A6400. Well, I'm actually talking on the microphone, but we'll come back to that. I'm looking at the Sony A6400 camera with the 16mm Sigma lens, and it's taken me a bit of mucking around to get this right because it's not just the camera and the lens, but there's also... I actually had to write this down because I kept forgetting the name. An Elgato Camlink 4K device, which takes micro HDMI out of the camera. It goes down into this USB device and then into the back of the computer. And then I've got a dummy battery, which is effectively like a battery on the end of a power cable that goes up inside the camera. And that is the setup. And it's at the moment, it's just sitting on a tripod in a location here, which is not where I really want the thing to remain. I'd rather have like an arm or something, but it's starting to look good. And I just saw Josh's King here at the Bokeh Effect. So the Bokeh Effect is super cool. For those of you not familiar with the Bokeh Effect, that's where I'm in focus and everything behind me, like in the background, looks kind of faded. But what's super, super sweet about this lens is it's really quick at changing focus as you move around, and the camera is really good at facial tracking. So the camera has one of these fold-up screens like this, so I can look at the top of this, and just above the lens here, I can see the screen. And incidentally, I can look at the screen, and it doesn't really look like I'm not looking at the lens, which is cool. And when I see the screen, like I've got all of the normal sort of overlay stuff on there, including a big box around my head. And as I go like this, like the whole time it focuses on my head. Well, doesn't really need to change focus. I haven't changed depth of field, but it follows my head really quickly. Now, when I go back, watch how smooth this transition is. I don't know how great it will look over the internet and streaming and everything, but to me, it looks pretty good. See, like now everything is in focus, and then as you come up there, all the background goes out of focus. And the light management seems really good. And compared to the Logitech Brio webcam I had on here before, which was a good webcam, it's about as good as webcams get pretty much for something which is traditional and just plugs into USB. But compared to that, this is just chalk and cheese. Now, when I did a little 20-second test just before recording this, I did note that things looked a little bit more compressed when I played them back from YouTube. So I'm not quite sure how that looks on your end at the moment. I did the video last week. I recorded it all offline. I recorded it in 4K just to see what it looked like with 4K. And actually, I made the comment at the time, it's like, oh, this is going to be a pain in the ass to render and then upload because it's going to be massive. It created a 13-gigabyte file for about, I think I spoke for about 25 minutes or something, which is large-ish. But once I actually pumped it out of Adobe Premiere, it boiled down to something like 2.5 gig, which is pretty much where 1080p was before anyway. So I'm not quite sure what magic is involved there because the one that uploaded to YouTube, to me at least, looked really good. That said, the 4K bit was fun as an experiment, but there's really no need to do it, particularly for these live videos. So everything's back to 1080p and it's at normal frame rates. And I think I've got all of this spot on now. So I will share all those details in a blog post a little bit later on because a huge amount of research went into it. I'm super happy with the result. Now, I did a meetup last night over Zoom using this setup, and it looked really, really sharp. So I was really, really happy about that. So I think I've got this right. But yeah, leave a comment if you can see areas for me to fix this up. One of the things I want to do, actually, I want to figure out what to do with that wall behind me. It's just plain. The thing I'm going to try and do something with that, and I'm really tempted, the wall in front of me, which is just a plain white wall, just to cover it in soundproof material as well. I think it looked kind of cool. I might do that. We'll see. Now, anyway, talking about actually, before I get into all the other things, because I normally try and do this early on now, let's go and touch on the sponsorship side of things as well. And I've got Varonis back this week with sponsorship. They're talking about Security FWD, a brand new series from them. Watch episode one on how far Wi-Fi can travel now. So Varonis is one of these companies that I've had a very long relationship now with. Back in the day, as we can now say, I used to go places with Varonis, like physical places. So I remember being at RSA with Varonis in San Francisco and at InfoSec EU in London in the middle of the year a few years ago as well. These days, they're on my blog. And mind you, I did do a bunch of free training for Varonis as well, or rather, let's be clear about this, training that they put out for free. So nice to have those guys back there. They've been on there this week. They have used this messaging around how far Wi-Fi can travel a few times now, so do go and check it out. Obviously, that has got a long life, speaking about Wi-Fi. One day, I should show you how much Wi-Fi stuff is still in boxes in my cupboard from Ubiquiti that I still haven't figured out what to do with. We'll come back to that. All right, so just looking at some of the comments here. So someone's made a comment, enjoyed the NDC stream yesterday. Yeah, so let's touch on that actually, because this was one of the things on my list to do. So we did a meetup for NDC, the Norwegian Developer Conference, yesterday, we being Scott Helm and myself, and it was moderated by Lars Klint. And this was good because they are two of my best mates in the world as well. So it's always nice to do that. And this was originally intended to be an in-person meetup. We would have been in Melbourne doing a meetup. Obviously, nobody goes anywhere at the moment. And for those of you from other places in the world, in fact, we'll do the corona update in a moment as well. In Australia, Melbourne is the one place you really don't want to go at the moment because that has turned out to be a bit of a mess. But I'm going to come back to that because I haven't even checked the scoreboard for today in terms of how we're going corona-wise. So anyway, we did a meetup. It was just a bunch of questions that people had previously asked and then questions that were dropped into the chat. We only did it for about an hour. I think we probably could have done about 3 hours, but that's fine. It was a good opportunity for that. And then we gave away a couple of free tickets to NDC Melbourne as well. And, of course, NDC Melbourne is not in Melbourne. NDC Melbourne is online. But, frankly, that's kind of better for most people out there because it doesn't matter where you're in the world, you can go to it so long as you're happy to play with those time zones. Now, NDC Melbourne is on from the 27th to the 30th of July. It is now a four-day online workshop event. Scott and I are doing workshops. We are doing the Hack Yourself First workshop. We've got people like Amy Kapanik there as well. Amy does a whole bunch of cool front-end stuff. Ian Cooper, I think he's doing some messaging things. Aaron Powell, another Aussie mate of ours. There's a whole bunch of people in here doing events online, and obviously that's just the way it's going to be for a while. So anyway, I'll be doing NDC Melbourne in, 10 days or something. And incidentally, those tickets for workshops as well, it's the same workshop as in person, but the tickets are about half the price, so it's a super, super bargain. Alrighty, so that's NDC and everything coming up. Now, I'm just going to jump over here and look at the comments, how it felt when you're not able to tweet because of being verified. I'm going to come back to Twitter. Don't worry about that. That is definitely there on my list. Put a NanoLeaf setup behind you on the wall. This is an interesting point. So both my kids now have NanoLeafs in their rooms. My son's place feels like a freaking nightclub because he's got like neon NanoLeaf. He's got neon behind his Nerf board. He's got neon behind his bookshelf. He's got neon under his bed. We're waiting for a couple of bedside tables, neon, neon. My daughter's got a NanoLeaf, more neon, and then a whole bunch of like starry twinkly lights and things. So I've gone absolutely overboard on lights and things lately. And the NanoLeaf, I'm not sure it really fits my brand. it's nice. I love playing with it. I love the fact that I have more IP addresses in my house by virtue of having them. But there we go. How fast is my internet? 1 gigabyte download. Yeah, very funny. My internet is as fast as it can possibly go, which means let's do a speed test. So we get speed test. So whilst the speed test is running, for anyone in Australia or familiar with Australia, I am on the NBN, which is the National Broadband Network. So this is effectively Australia's path forward for broadband. It has had its issues. I think the Aussies here would agree with me on. One of the issues is that as a brand new broadband network rolling out really only over the last 2 or 3 years as a, like a pathway forward to the future, the thing's limited to 100 megabits. Now, I know this has been changing a bit recently, but I'll come back to that. So the thing rolled out, it's like, well, look at this new super fast network. You get 100 megabits down. I'm like, what? This is bullshit. Like, I used to get more than 100 megabits on ADSL2, except I only got about 2 megabits up. Speed test just now, I'm getting 54.6 down, 22.6 up. So I've actually had to halve my down speed in order to go to NBN, which sucks. But I've literally gotten 10x up on the up speed. Now, NBN have more recently released plans that allow you to go up to gigabit, which would be really, really nice. Thank you, Tim, for reminding me of that. But what happens is you've got sort of the national broadband network rolls out to all the houses around the country. A bunch of them are just fiber to the node and then the copper wire. Some of them are fiber to the home. There are different models in different places. You then get resellers that you can effectively buy the plan from. So you can go to a big one like Telstra. I use one called Aussie Broadband, which incidentally, if you're in Australia, these guys have been epic. I've put them into a whole bunch of friends and relatives' places and mine. Just amazing, amazing service. But I cannot get any faster speed. So even though I'm paying for a 100 megabit plan at the moment, I'm only getting like 55, really. So no, I'm definitely not able to get gigabit. And we just don't know when it's going to happen. NBN's like, yeah, sometime in the future. For the most part, it actually doesn't matter too much. The only time I really feel it is when I'm setting up a new machine, as I've been doing the last week, or when I'm having, let's say someone sends me an absolutely freaking massive data breach, and it's like, well, that's going to take me a day before I can even look at it. So that has been a little bit shit. Speed test while streaming. Yeah, YOLO, man, why not? And the speed test is still pretty accurate. The actual required bandwidth for streaming at 1080p, once it compresses it and pushes it up to YouTube, is not that much. It's really not that much. And I'm seeing that here in my upload speed. In fact, if I go back to the history of my speed test app and I look at my last speed test, I got 22.6 just then while streaming. The last one I got was 23.28. So there you go. One before that was 24.2. So all of these are within about 5% of each other. Okay, what else we got in here? Oh, you had VDSL last time, still no GPON. No, that's what we're stuck with. NZ has hyperfiber. Yeah, we all hear about how nice your internet is in New Zealand. Thank you for reminding me of that. Aussie Broadband's great. Yeah, they are epic. You know what it is with Aussie Broadband? I'll tell you what for me, the eventual catalyst was to roll over to Aussie Broadband. I started with my parents. They were the guinea pig. So they were on Telstra, which is Australia's largest telco. They're sort of the default position for many things, just because they're the big incumbent player. So they had NBN via Telstra, and their connection kept dropping out. Now they have NBN into a modem in their property, and then we have the modem going into Ubiquiti's Amplify. So I set up Amplify in their home. I blogged about it many years ago, so that they've actually got nice internal Wi-Fi. And the problem we had was that Telstra just did not want to help at all whilst we had Amplify there. So they're basically saying, look, unless you use the Telstra-provided Wi-Fi device, which is separate to the modem, we will not give you support. And I'm saying to them, look, it's not the freaking gear. Like, who do I trust more, Telstra or Ubiquiti? Like, it's not the Ubiquiti stuff. And we could clearly see dropouts as well, even indicated by the status lights on the modem itself, but they just would not help. And I eventually got to the point where I used fairly direct wording about how I felt about that. And we went to Aussie Broadband knowing that it was an NBN problem. We knew it was going to be an NBN problem. As soon as we went to Aussie and I spoke to someone, and it is always someone local too, which does seem to make a big difference when you don't feel like you're speaking to someone on the other side of the world. And I was like, look, mate, here's the problem. Here's what we've done. It's clearly an underlying issue. And literally the operator is talking to is like, yeah, sure. Look, let me just run some diagnostics on your connection so we can find, oh, I can see it's been dropping out. We'll get an NBN engineer out there. And they just fixed everything straight away. And I was like, this is awesome. And especially for my, let's say for my parents, early 70s, if they need to call up and get tech support, speaking to someone who can they speak to the one person who helps them and they solve the problem is just a big, big difference. Anyway, didn't mean to go off my whole Aussie Broadband thing. What else have we got? How do you download and upload huge data? I'm selling 100 megabits max. Well, I don't get 100 megabits. I get about half that. Look, it's still about, someone else can do the math, it's still sort of 4 megabytes a second or something thereabouts. But once you expand that out, it's very rare to get data breaches that are so big that that is an inconvenient amount of time. And what I mean by that is let's say the 95th percentile of data breaches, I can still start it downloading, go downstairs, have a coffee, read some tweets, come back up and it's done. So it's usually not such a problem, but it's still a bit shit. Got to get two lines and bond. Yeah, I thought about getting multiple lines. It's just, it doesn't actually impact me that much at the moment. It's more the thing of having people from places like New Zealand talk about how much better their internet is than mine. The practical side of it doesn't make a whole big difference. Uploading data to my site doesn't necessarily take a lot of time. I'll tell you why. I'm uploading a breach at the moment. It's actually a revision to a breach. In fact, I can talk about this. Let's talk about this. This is Tokopedia. So Tokopedia is an Indonesian e-commerce site. And the breach was earlier this year. And then about 12 million records were released. I put the 12 million records in back in, what date did I create this? I've got all this open here. I put this in May, and someone over the last couple of days has just sent me the entire thing. The entire thing is actually 71 million records. So 71 million record data breach is a pretty sizable data breach. By the time I actually dump all those emails into text files, zip the text file, it's a 278 megabyte file. So to upload 278 megabytes over a 24 megabit connection is still, I can't remember. Actually, it'll probably tell me how long it took, it because I did that in a tool that probably, no, it doesn't actually tell me how long it took. Yeah, look, it probably took about 10 minutes, you know? So what's 10 minutes? It doesn't matter. Telstra, just this from Steve here, Telstra supplying NBN modems with 4G backup for when the NBN drops out is kind of telling. Yeah. Having said that, my NBN has actually been very reliable. It's been pretty rare to have dropouts. They've been very short if they have dropped out. And there's been some planned maintenance, but I've been given a heads up, and it's normally been at crazy hours of the night when it really doesn't worry me anyway. I will come back to the recent Twitter thing. So I said I'd update people on the Corona thing, and I know that we've got some people from Australia here, other people from other parts of the world. So we have fared, even at the moment, exceptionally well in Australia, and you'll see what I mean by even at the moment, in a moment. So I'll give you a good example. Our state here, our state of Queensland. So we have had, I'm just going to check the latest stats here. We have had, in our state of 5.1 million people, we've had six deaths. So six people have died. Tragic. But six people, all elderly, out of 5.1 million people is absolutely amazing. We have, what's the current active case for Queensland? Queensland, we have four active cases. So there are four people in our state of 5.1 million people, a state that is twice the size of Texas, four people are crook. So we've done enormously well here. The next state down, New South Wales, hasn't done as well. There are a lot more people in New South Wales. I forget off the top of my head. I think it's about 8. Is it 8 million tonight? It's more than what we've got. Maybe it's like 6. Let's just say more. Now, it's just figure updated. As of today, they have 44 active cases. Now, unfortunately, a week ago, they had 7 active cases. And the reason for New South Wales ticking up is because the state beneath that, Victoria, Melbourne, which is a reference I was just making to NDC Melbourne before, they have got, where are the active cases here now? Vic hospitalised, Vic recoveries, Vic active cases, 2,128. So we're like 4 cases, 44 cases, 2,128 cases, because they've had a massive outbreak down there. So at the moment, the big news in Australia is everyone's trying to control or rather contain the outbreak in Victoria. And we're just looking like day by day at the numbers. And it's kind of like it's amazingly good for most of the country, but then it's kind of horrifying for Victoria because we go days like yesterday. All right, here we go. Northern. So we've only got 8 states and territories in Australia too, by the way, so this is an easy list. Northern Territory, 0. Australian Capital Territory, 0. Tasmania, 0. South Australia, 1. Western Australia, 2. Queensland, 0. New South Wales, 10. Victoria, 317 new cases. So it kind of gives you a little bit of a sense of of what's going on down there and what an outlier they are and how much that state is now being isolated. My plan A is to go to the snow in New South Wales, not Victoria, 3 weeks from today. So my sincere hope, I mean, obviously I'd also like people not to be sick, but the sincere hope is that everything gets contained down there and it just gets kept to Victoria. And obviously the hope is that Victoria turns their numbers around, but also that New South Wales doesn't have a surge as well. So we can get down there and enjoy the holidays. Because I tell you what, places like Snowfields are absolutely copping it at the moment, more so than most places, because they've got such a small window of opportunity in Australia to actually do business. All right, so I'm going to move on here. Harley, nice camera. Elgato is looking good. Yep. And as Steve says, most of New South Wales cases are traced back to a Victorian transport worker who went to, as they call it, Crossroads Hotel. So it seems to be like a truck stop. Went there, saw too many people, passed it on, and the thing, it just spread so quickly. Incidentally, I was chatting to someone recently, and I said, and this only sounds not dickish now that you understand the numbers, but there is only one occasion I've needed to wear a mask during this whole pandemic. And if that sounds a little bit dickish, and every now and then when I take a photo of like wandering around the streets, I'll be down at the beach and riding my bike, taking video, and people on the internet get very, very angry. And they say, why aren't you wearing your mask? It's like, because there are four people in a state of 5.1 million who are sick. But the one time I've had to wear a mask is going into the Apple shop. So if anyone here is local Gold Coast, I went to the Apple shop at Robina. To get into the Apple shop, you have to wear a mask. No one else is wearing a mask. Okay, there are very, very few people. Very exceptional, I'd say. 5% of people at most wear a mask. But yeah, to get into the Apple shop, everyone, because everything is the Apple way. All right, so moving on. This is actually episode 200 of this weekly update. I have not missed a single week, which under recent circumstances that I've spoken about in recent weekly updates is somewhat of a miracle. Now, I was just looking back on it. So when was episode one? When did I do that? 23rd of September, 2016. So almost 4 years ago. Wow. How about that? I look younger there, less stressed than what I have been lately. Episode 100. When did I hit that? That was, there you go. I was at the snow, 17th of August, 2018. I was literally at the snow. And that was actually the last time that I've been to that spot too. So here we are almost bang on 2 years later. And hopefully I will be doing my weekly update from the snow 4 weeks from today. 3 weeks from today, I'll still be sitting here. All right. So I am going to come back to the Twitter breach thing in a moment, but I had a question from Burton. And now Burton is the bloke who recommended I go and get this, get a camera set up. So he made a very, very good suggestion on that. And he emailed me a question and asked if I'd tackle it in this update. And the question says, effectively, am I approached by companies to review their product? Which is an interesting question. So the easy answer is yes. The harder answer is, when do I say yes and when do I say no? So first of all, there's a blog post on this. If you're in our meetup yesterday, you know there's a blog post for everything. But there's a blog post for this where I wrote about here's what I choose what to endorse. And there's a kind of a few, I guess, rules of thumb for me. So a couple of really good examples of things that I endorse. And just to be clear, like not everything that I endorse I get paid for either. Something like, let's say Ubiquiti. So I have a lot of Ubiquiti stuff in my house, which I just mentioned I've got a cupboard full of it there. I decided to use Ubiquiti because when I was asking people about how do I build out my home network? You know, what's a better way of solving my Wi-Fi connectivity problems? Time and time and time again, people go, Ubiquiti, Ubiquiti, Ubiquiti. And I was like, all right, let's do this. And I'm going to do this stuff properly. And I went and spent, I think it was almost 2,500 Aussie dollars, which take off about 30%, if you want to put that in USD terms, on buying a whole bunch of Ubiquiti stuff. And I wrote up the blog post as I went through the process, and I loved it because it's just really, really good gear. And then after I wrote that, obviously Ubiquiti saw it, it got a lot of traction, and now they send me stuff. And I'm okay with that because I found that product by my own free volition, and I was very, very happy with what they did. Same with Lenovo. So I've got a Lenovo laptop there. There's a Lenovo laptop all bokered out just there. And I actually, those two ones they sent me. The reason they sent them to me is because I've been buying Lenovo stuff for years. Anyway, the machine before that I'd bought out of my own cold hard cash because I like the gear, and I'd always had Lenovo machines at work as well, which work paid for, but I knew that they were robust and reliable and all the rest of it. So the one that's now streaming all this is a Lenovo ThinkStation, and I'm going to talk about this probably in next week's update if I can write the blog post about all the details. I went and paid for that myself as well. I got a small discount from Lenovo, but other than that, I paid for it because it's a good product. So I don't mind endorsing stuff like that, which I'm going to use anyway, and I say to people, this is what it is, and when they give me stuff, I always tell you as well. So if I get something for free from someone, I'm going to tell you what it is and why I'm endorsing it. There are other occasions where there might be things I endorse. There'll be one I'll talk about probably very soon where I think it's a combination of a good product and an interesting relationship and something which deserves to have airtime. And again, I don't want to go into too much detail yet because we haven't exactly finalized everything. But it's something that I'm happy standing behind. Because here's the thing with all this, right? Like the endorsement stuff only works when people trust that you've got an independent voice and that you're not plugging something because you're getting paid money for it. You know, there's got to be a good reason why you're interested in it, either be getting paid money or getting free stuff. There's got to be a good reason for it. Now, if I turn around and I start endorsing things that I would in other way, not ever stand behind, and people start going, well, we just can't trust what he says, like the entire point of it disappears. And it not only messes that up, it messes up your whole brand and reputation and everything else. So there's just never, ever any reason why it's worth taking a risk around things like endorsing things that you can't honestly stand behind. There are loads of times where people want to send me things and I say, no, I'm just like, don't send it to me because I don't want to spend the time looking into it and figuring out what it is and whether it's any good. I didn't find it by my own free volition. So it's not like I kept seeing everybody talk about this thing, so I went and got it. I don't care what it is. Okay, if you're from Ferrari, call me. We'll have a different discussion. But for the most part, I'm actually endorsed in the product. That's different. But for the most part, I don't just want people to send me free stuff that then creates some sort of an obligation on me to talk about. I did have Synology send me a disk station this week. I've had Synology stuff, I think, since about 2012, and I've talked about it a lot publicly. And when I set this disk station up, eventually, if I like what it does over and above the other one, then I'll talk about that as well. But I also make it super, super clear to anyone I get involved in endorsements, like, you're not just like buying my voice. You don't get to say, I want you to tweet this or tweet that or whatever else. And I can be strict about it because it doesn't matter if I don't have the relationship with them. It just doesn't matter. Now, that said, I made a note here. Let's say the Ubiquiti stuff. So the only time Ubiquiti's ever paid me is when I wrote courses for them, which is fine because they're huge investments in time. And that's what I do. I make money from Pluralsight doing the same thing. Everything else is just equipment that they pick up off the shelf and they send me, and if I like it, I talk about it. It is a really, really good ROI for a company like Ubiquiti to do that, because stock sitting on shelves that, let's say, something retails for $500, the cost of that for an organization to send out is just about nothing in the scheme of things, and the exposure they get and the voice they get behind it is massive in terms of the ROI on it. So it makes a lot of sense for companies like that who I do have a good relationship with to send stuff. So in a case like that, it's like it's win-win. I love Ubiquiti sending me stuff. Every now and then a nice package arrives. I'm waiting, and I'm going to talk more about related things next week, but I'm waiting for UPS from them, because the other day I tweeted and said I need to get a UPS for my server rack. What do I recommend? And they said, hey, we've got one. We'll send you over one. Now, great. That'll tie into all of my other Ubiquiti things. And when I write about that, I'll say, they sent it to me, and if I like it, I'll say I like it, and if there's things I don't like about it, I'll tell you what those are as well. All right, hope that clarifies it. Darren, message retracted. Oh, it's interesting now. All right, so moving on. Twitter. Let's talk about the Twitter thing. That was interesting. Now, Twitter had themselves a really interesting day yesterday. I had a busy day. I had all sorts of commitments that sort of kept me off my Twitter for a while. And then I get on and there's all these people going, hey, have you seen this thing? So long and short of it is several high-profile accounts. So think Bill Gates, Elon Musk, who are some of the other ones? Kanye West were tweeting about Bitcoin. So I'm looking at one of the Bill Gates ones here in the news article that popped up in my Google feed because I made a comment on. So Bill says, and this is Bill Gates' verified account, everyone is asking me to give back and now is the time. I am doubling all payments sent to my BTC address for the next 30 minutes. You send $1,000, I send you back $2,000. BTC address, here you go. Only going on for 30 minutes. Enjoy. Now, this is not Bill Gates. Like, can you imagine? There's a little bit of, there's probably a law that explains this, but, well, there's certainly a saying, a fool and their money is soon parted. Really? You reckon Bill Gates is going to go, yeah, just send me some BTC and I'll flick you back 2x BTC? Like, this, to think that this was ever going to be real is just crazy. Now, having said that, like all social engineering scams, and this really is a social engineering scam, there's always a fraction of people that fall for it. And I've seen some commentary about the amount of BTC that has gone to this address, and it looks like certainly the Bill Gates and the Kanye examples here are both the same Bitcoin address. Apparently, the amount is in six figures. And that's kind of impressive. That's kind of impressive. And actually, when we were doing this NDC meetup last night, Scott and I started having the discussion. It was like, if you could control really high-profile Twitter accounts, so Elon Musk, I think, has got 30 million something followers. Gates has got 50 million something. Adam Kanye West as well. You're up into the well over 100 million worth of exposure of accounts, probably some crossover there. What is the highest and best use of owning those accounts? It's probably not going to be much of value in DMs. I don't imagine Bill Gates is sitting there having sensitive discussions via Twitter DM. So the value surely is in the exposure. And then you look at the time frames here. So I'm not quite sure what time zone this is, but the screen caps in this Sydney Morning Herald article, which is an Australian news outlet, show 5 p.m. Now, I imagine that was about 5 p.m. somewhere in the US, because the other discussion we're having is how would you absolutely maximize exposure? Well, you try and pick the time of day when you're going to have the most people seeing those tweets, because you know people are going to cotton onto this really, really quickly. So as best we can see, it looks like they're going, okay, let's pick prime time here. I wonder if they gave any thought to the day of the week as well. Prime time, high-profile accounts, a way of monetization that's only going to get a small slice of people, but you're getting a small slice of hundreds of millions of people, and that's the MO. I can't honestly think of a better ROI other than the fact Scott started saying, if you had Musk's account and you wanted to you wanted to make a few comments about things which might impact the share price of Tesla. Okay, well, if you're shorting that stock, for example, that could be an interesting thing. I imagine, though, that might be a little bit harder to get away with if someone has sort of shorted Tesla just before something like that. There tends to be a bit more of a paper trail when you're buying stocks in a company as opposed to just dealing in cryptocurrency. Now, the other part of the discussion, of course, is how did this happen? Did Twitter have a data breach? So apparently, this comes back to social engineering of Twitter employees. And I really, really, really super hope that Twitter is transparent in the way they communicate this. And of course, there might be operational reasons which makes it hard for them to do that. But I would love to know, like, what was it? How did you socially engineer someone in Twitter to hand over access to these accounts? Because I have many other questions related to that. One of those questions is there a single point of failure? Do we have a situation where one single person in Twitter can give someone else access to an account? And by extension, do we have one single person in Twitter who could conceivably take over an account themselves? Imagine it was Trump's account. And imagine, putting aside the fact it's a bit hard to tell when Trump tweets are serious or not, but just imagine they had access to his account and they tweeted something super inflammatory. Someone made a comment in the workshop yesterday, workshop, meetup, whatever it was, something along the lines of, like, this could, you know, almost be like the beginning of a proverbial nuclear war. Like, if you had access to that account and you tweeted something super, super inflammatory, at the very least, you cause huge amounts of embarrassment. So I'm really wondering now just how much control you could have as a single person in Twitter. It's curious. And in this, I'll put this in the blog post I wrote about the weekly update, but I made comments here to the Sydney Morning Herald. I said that there's also a question to be asked about, with the benefit of hindsight, their controls are insufficient because someone got into a bunch of accounts. So obviously something needs to change. It would be interesting if we know what it is that actually happened to look at it and say, scroll back a week ago. If we were all to sit there and look at it a week ago, would we say that is actually a reasonable set of controls? And someone was just super clever and super sophisticated and they managed to get past that. And this is possible, right? Because there's always an adversary who's well enough resourced or ingenious enough to get past pretty much anything. So I wonder what it will actually look like when we find out. All right, gonna have a look at some of the comments here. So yeah, Barack Obama, here's another one. Biden, Uber, Bezos also had his account taken. And yeah, Darren's made a comment here. These send me one and I'll send you two crypto scams we've been going on for years, just not via hacking social media accounts. One of the places we've seen a lot on social media accounts is people have taken over other verified accounts, changed the name to look like Elon Musk, and then tweeted to basically look like Musk is tweeting about crypto scams. So we've seen these a lot, but we just haven't, as far as I know, seen it with the actual takeover of accounts like this. When I first heard about this and I was looking at these messages, I thought, I bet you the most likely explanation for this is going to be that these guys are all using a third-party app, let's say, for argument's sake, Hootsuite, and Hootsuite had the ability to tweet, and there was a vulnerability somewhere with Hootsuite, and that's what happened. So that's what my guess would have been before hearing that someone literally gave them access via social engineering. I shouldn't laugh, but anyway. So these scams have been there for ages. There are even scam ads on YouTube itself. Yep, fair point. Burton, are you worried about your Twitter DMs being leaked? I don't know. You got me thinking now. It's actually in my Twitter DMs. I'm not overly concerned about that. Part of the reason is I think the most obvious conclusion people would draw about my concern would be, what if I was having discussions with people about data breaches, which could also contain discussions about illegal activity and things? There have been, I would say, a double-digit number of people that I have communicated with via Twitter in the past who have since been arrested and charged. And I am always super, super conscious that anything that I put, frankly, in writing anywhere, but especially in DMs to some anonymous person trying to pass on data that they've obtained, possibly themselves, I'm conscious that that always could end up in front of law enforcement. And there have been cases in the past where I've literally said to law enforcement, here is what I said to people in DMs, with the full knowledge that this is information that they could have obtained themselves via legal due process as well. So I don't think there's much in my DMs that I'm worried about. Occasionally, I do go through and, in fact, I say this to Scott Helm sometimes. It's like, mate, it's probably time for a mutual delete of our entire chat history on the various platforms which we chat on. And it's just because some of our discussions are very, very candid, let's leave it at that, about our opinions on some things. So I actually think a purging of these things every now and then is not a bad idea. In fact, I like the idea. When I think back to my email history, you know, like, how often do you go through and delete stuff out of your email history? And you always have stuff in your email history which you wouldn't want leaked. The question is, do I really want to have more than two decades worth of it sitting there if someone gets access to it? It'd be nice to be able to just purge it, because I can't think of any real harm if I was to delete, say, every email older than 5 years. 5 years would probably do it. Anyway, food for thought. So, yeah, no, I'm not honestly worried about it, Burton. Newt says, how could you really manage to quote something more inflammatory than Trump does himself? There are ways. There are ways. And again, I think where Scott was going when he was talking about sort of shorting Tesla stock, I remember years ago, I used this in a talk. There was, I think it was the Associated Press account was taken over, and there was a tweet about an explosion at the White House and Barack Obama being injured or killed. And there was a very noticeable, measurable drop in the Dow. So think about that and think about what you could do with that. So Steve Williams says, one article claimed to have quotes from one of the scammers claiming they paid a Twitter employee with photos of the internal admin doing the scam post. Now, I did hear rumors of there being screen grabs of internal admin tools. Now, I mean, this would be interesting if one person in Twitter was paid, or let's even be a little bit more sympathetic. Let's say one person in Twitter was blackmailed. Let's say it was sextortion or something like that. We still come back to this point where should you have one point of failure? And that, you know, there's a whole sort of segregation of duties discussion in there about should one person be able to perform a task in isolation or should we have someone else? But, you know, this sort of, this illustrates that point, right? Michael says, I would wager that multiple people in Twitter support has access to accounts. It does sound that way. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this as a result. And look, part of the reason why I hope that this is shared very, very openly is because we don't want to see this happen with Facebook or Instagram or other things like that as well. This is, you know, this could do really, really serious damage. Now, there is an interesting point here from Detlef. Sorry if I've mispronounced that. If I remember correctly, employee access to Trump's account was restricted after an employee deleted his account a few years ago. So I do remember a comment about that at the time. So a few years back, someone managed to nuke his account. And it was someone in Twitter. And I think from memory, it might have been political protest as well. So that there's I think there might be an interesting discussion out of all of this around, are the levels of control commensurate with the value of the account or the impact of the account? Look, if it's Elon Musk, you know, he's got 30 million plus followers. It's like, surely we should be going, like, once you hit 1 million followers, you're someone who's actually really, really noteworthy and you're going to be a big target and there should be different controls. And maybe there are already. And again, I go back to the point of perhaps the controls were reasonable with the information we had at the time and it's just someone was super, super smart and managed to figure out how to get around them. So Krebs on Security has a pretty insightful article with possible quotes from the attackers. I need to go and read that after this, which would be interesting. Some other conspiracy theories here in the chat. And thanks, everyone, for these comments, too. It does make it a lot more interesting. I hope for everyone watching or listening later on as well. So Brian says, worth using a chat app like Signal, which can be set to delete messages after a set time. Look, there's Signal, there's Telegram, there's Wire, there's a bunch of other different messaging platforms that people use. And I do end up getting communications across all of those. Keybase Messenger is another one that's used a bit. People send PGP emails, which, of course, don't self-destruct. But, again, there's a higher barrier to entry to actually access them. For the right conversations, I would use platforms like that. Even iMessage is end-to-end encrypted, but of course then the message still sits there on the device and I get the point. It doesn't sort of self-destruct. Maybe we should be doing all this over Snapchat or something. I don't know. But I tend to defer to whatever platform the person contacting me wants to use. So I personally rarely reach out to people with anything sensitive unless I'm reporting a data breach. And I normally just start by email and then I say, how would you like to receive this information? Like, you choose the platform. But it's very much up to the other person. It's a little bit like, yeah, all the people who want to delete Facebook, you should use another social media platform. Okay, great. But I need to use things that the people around me want to use. Otherwise, it kind of doesn't work as well. What else we got in here? So there's a good question from Doug here. Was there any information about if the hacked Twitter accounts had 2FA enabled? When I first started seeing this and I saw people like Bill Gates, and look, it's not just because he's a technical bloke, but he's obviously very, very high profile. I'm thinking, yeah, surely at least some of these really high profile accounts would have had 2FA enabled. So if they got 2FA enabled, it's almost certainly not account compromised by, say, a reused password. And you'd also really, really hope that Gates isn't reusing his passwords. Jeez, I hope not, Bill. So on the surface of it, it never sort of seemed to me like a 2FA thing. I would imagine that these accounts did have 2FA, at least some of them had 2FA, and whatever mechanism was used here circumvented the 2FA, which also tells you something about 2FA, doesn't it? It's certainly not foolproof at any time. All right, let's have a look. What else we got in here? As Steve says, the accounts may have had 2FA, but the internal admin tool can post to accounts without authentication, which is pretty much the issue. That's where we're at the moment, isn't it? Newt says, it feels wrong if one individual in Twitter can send out messages on behalf of a user account, though. That definitely feels the sort of thing that should require more than one employee. I think this is sort of one of the big takeaways from it, isn't it? The question is whether what is the right balance between running what is ultimately a free platform, and yes, there's ads and you're the product and all that sort of thing, but you don't pay money for it. So what's the right balance between doing that across hundreds of millions of people and then also trying to secure things and constrain things and also keep your cost down such that it is manageable. And again, I think the correct answer here is that there needs to be commensurate controls based on the risk profile of the different accounts. That seems to be the thing that's missing here. Darren Haxter, admin role, could be prevented by blockchain. Blockchain or next-gen blockchain? Should be next-gen blockchain. Blockchain, everyone thinks blockchain is the answer to everything. I'm not quite sure it is. All right, nice. So Christian Anderson says, regarding 2FA, this is my car license plate. It is Norwegian for use 2FA. Sweet. I wonder if I could get that plate here. That'd be good. I've got too many other issues with 2FA, I think, to put that on my car. But so last couple here before I probably start to wrap this up. It was notable that many people observed email addresses being modified on accounts. So if you can manually trigger a password reset to a different email without 2FA, it's GG. I wonder if that was the vector. Like, was it not directly, hey, could you please update the password for @BillGates? Was it some vector by which the email address for the reset process could be changed? But the problem then is that if you can do that with on an account with 2FA enabled and not have to show the second factor, well, what's the point, you know? What's the point of the 2FA? And Doug, seems a full incident response and corrective action should be employed by a third party. I would imagine Twitter is throwing a lot of money at a Mandiant or a FireEye or someone like that at the moment to try and get to the bottom of this and write a very, very nice report about it, because inevitably that's going to have to be what happens. So look, I'm going to wrap it up there. I hope this one worked well. I am going to go back and watch a little bit of it later on just to sort of see what that video quality looks like, what that audio quality looks like. It is my sincere intention to write up all the different things that are now around me, just to give you some indication of what phase I'm at. I'm holding up like three different packets of different sized cable management equipment here, because part of this is to try and get all those cables in check. Everything else is actually looking pretty sweet. The desk is a little bit of a mess now, but this was fairly amazing when I started getting it all set up. So I'm going to make everything really nice. I'll get some nice photos, put it in a blog post, and then I'll talk about it hopefully next week. And last comment there. So thanks very much around making it 200. Yeah, it has been a journey. Journey that will continue next week on to 201 and beyond there. So thanks very much for watching. I hope everyone has an awesome Friday or end of their Thursday, and I'll catch you next week. See you, everyone.